I don't understand.
You will, dear, she told him. Then she rose, sat on the edge of the bed, and lightly laid one hand on each of Tenedra's temples. The faint whisper came again, stronger this time, and once again the candles all flared and then sank back as if suffocating.
I know you are in there, she said then. You might as well speak.
Tenedra's expression grew contorted, and she tossed her head back and forth, as if trying to escape the hands touching her temples. Polgara's face grew stern, and she implacably kept her hands in place. The pale lock in her hair began to glow, and a strange chill came into the room, seeming to emanate from the bed itself. Tenedra suddenly screamed.
Speak, Polgara commanded. You cannot flee until I release you, and I will not release you until you speak.
Tenedra's eyes suddenly opened. They were filled with hate.
I do not fear thee, Polgara,
she said in a harsh, rasping voice, delivered in a peculiar accent.
And I fear you even less. Now, who are you?
Thou knowest me, Polgara.
Perhaps, but I will have your name from you.
There was a long pause, and the surge of Polgara's will grew even stronger. Tenedra screamed again, a scream filled with agony that made Geryon flinch.
Stop!
The harsh voice cried.
I will speak.
Say your name,
Polgara insisted implacably.
I am Zandramas.
So, what do you hope to gain by this?
An evil chuckle escaped Tenedra's pale lips.
I have already stolen her heart, Polgara, her child. Now I will steal her mind as well. I could easily kill her if I choose, but a dead queen may be buried, and her grave left behind. A mad one, on the other hand, will give thee much to distract thee from the search for the Tzardian.
I can banish you with a snap of my fingers, Zandramas.
And I can return just as quickly.
A frosty smile touched Polgara's lips.
You are not nearly as clever as I thought. Did you actually believe that I twisted your name out of you for my own amusement? Were you ignorant of the power over you that you gave me when you spoke your own name? The power of the name is the most elementary of all. I can keep you out of Tenedra's mind now. There's much more, though. For example, I know now that you are at Ashabar, haunting the bat-infested ruins of the House of Torak like a poor, ragged ghost.
A startled gasp echoed through the room.
Oh, I could tell you more, Zandramas, but this is all beginning to bore me.
She straightened, her hands still locked to the sides of Tenedra's head. A white lock at her brow flared into incandescence, and the faint whisper became a deafening roar.
Now, be gone, she commanded.
Tenedra moaned, and her face suddenly contorted into an expression of agony. An icy, stinking wind seemed to howl through the room, and the candles and glowing braziers sank even lower until the room was scarcely lit.
Be gone, Polgara repeated.
An agonized wail escaped Tenedra's lips, and then that wail became disembodied, coming, it seemed, from the empty air above the bed. The candles went out, and all light ceased to glow out of the braziers. The wailing voice began to fade, moving swiftly until it came to them as no more than a murmur echoing from an unimaginable distance.
Is Zandramas gone?
Geryon asked in a shaking voice.
Yes,
Polgara replied calmly out of the sudden darkness.
What are we going to say to Tenedra? When she wakes up, I mean. She won't remember any of this. Just tell her something vague. Make some light, dear.
Geryon fumbled for one of the candles, brushed his sleeve against it, then deftly caught it before it hit the floor. He was sort of proud of that.
Don't play with it, Geryon, just light it.
Her tone was so familiar and so commonplace that he began to laugh, and the little surge of his will that he directed at the candle was a stuttering sort of thing. The flame that appeared bobbled and hiccuped at the end of the wick in a soundless golden chortle. Polgara looked steadily at the giggling candle, then closed her eyes.
"Oh, Geryon," she sighed in resignation.
He moved about the room, relighting the other candles and fanning the braziers back into life. The flames were all quite sedate, except for the original one, which continued to dance and laugh in blithe glee. Polgara turned to the hooded Dalesian healer.
"You are most perceptive, Andel. That sort of thing is difficult to recognize unless you know precisely what you are looking for."
"The perception was not mine, Lady Polgara,"
Andel replied.
"I was advised by another of the cause of Her Majesty's illness."
"Serratus?"
Andel nodded.
"The minds of all our race are joined with hers, for we are but the instruments of the task which lies upon her. Her concern for the Queen's well-being prompted her to intervene."
The hooded woman hesitated.
"The Holy Seeress also asked me to beg you to intercede with your husband in the matter of Toth. The Goodman's anger is causing that gentle guide extreme anguish, and his pain is also hers. What happened at Verkat had to happen. Otherwise the meeting between the Child of Light and the Child of Dark could not come to pass for ages hence."
Polgara nodded gravely.
"I thought it might have been something like that. Tell her that I will speak with Durnik in Toth's behalf."
Andel inclined her head gratefully.
"Geryon?"
Synedra murmured drowsily.
"Where are we?"
He turned to her quickly. "Are you all right?" he asked, taking her hand in his.
"Mm-hmm,"
she said.
"I'm just so very sleepy. What happened? Where are we?"
"We're at Rakhaga."
He threw a quick glance at Polgara, then turned back to the bed.
"You just had a little fainting spell, is all,"
he said with a slightly exaggerated casualness.
"How are you feeling?"
"Fine, dear. But I think I'd like to go to sleep now."
And her eyes went closed. Then she opened them again with a sleepy little frown.
"Geryon,"
she murmured.
"Why is that candle acting like that?"
He kissed her, lightly on the cheek.
"Don't worry about it, dear," he told her.
But she had already fallen fast asleep. It was well past midnight when Geryon was awakened by a light tapping on the door of the room in which he slept.
"Who is it?"
he asked, half rising in his bed.
"A messenger from the Emperor, Your Majesty,"
a voice replied from the other side of the door.
"He instructed me to ask if you would be so good as to join him in his private study."
"Now? In the middle of the night?"
"Such was the Emperor's instructions, Your Majesty."
"All right,"
Geryon said, throwing off his blankets and swinging around to put his feet on the cold floor.
"Give me a minute or so to get dressed."
"Of course, Your Majesty."
Muttering to himself, Geryon began to pull on his clothes by the faint light coming from the brazier in the corner. When he was dressed, he splashed cold water on his face and raked his fingers through his sandy hair, trying to push it into some semblance of order. Almost as an afterthought, he ducked his head and arm through the strap attached to the sheath of the iron-grip sword and shrugged it into place across his back. Then he opened the door.
"All right," he said to the messenger. "Let's go."
Khal Zakath's study was a book-lined room with several leather-upholstered chairs, a large polished table, and a crackling fire on the hearth. The Emperor, still clad in plain white linen, sat in a chair at the table, shuffling through a stack of parchment sheets by the light of a single oil lamp.
"You wanted to see me, Zakath?"
Geryon asked as he entered the room.
"Ah, yes, Belgerion,"
Zakath said,
pushing aside the parchments.
So good of you to come. I understand that your wife is recovering.
Geryon nodded.
Thank you again for sending Andel. Her aid was very helpful.
My pleasure, Belgerion.
Zakath reached out and lowered the wick in the lamp until the corners of the room filled with shadow.
I thought that we might talk a little.
Isn't it sort of late?
I don't sleep very much, Belgerion. A man can lose a third of his life in sleep. The day is filled with bright lights and distractions. The night is dim and quiet, and allows much greater concentration. Please, sit down.
Geryon unbuckled his sword and leaned it against a bookcase.
I am not really all that dangerous, you know, the Emperor said, looking pointedly at the great weapon.
Geryon smiled slightly, settling into a chair by the fire.
I didn't bring it because of you, Zakath. It's just a habit. It's not the kind of sword you want to leave lying around.
I don't think that anyone would steal it, Belgerion.
It can't be stolen. I just don't want anybody getting hurt by accidentally touching it.
Do you mean to say that it's that sword?
Geryon nodded.
I am sort of obliged to take care of it. It's a nuisance most of the time. But there have been a few occasions when I was glad I had it with me.
What really happened at Tol Mishrak?
Zakath asked suddenly.
I have heard all sorts of stories.
Geryon nodded wryly.
So have I. Most of them get the names right, but not very much else. Neither Torak nor I had very much control over what happened. We fought, and I stuck that sword into his chest.
And he died.
Zakath's face was intent.
Eventually, yes.
Eventually?
He vomited fire first and wept flames. Then he cried out.
What did he say?
Mother,
Geryon replied shortly. He did not really want to talk about it.
What an extraordinary thing for him to do. What happened to his body? I had the entire ruin of Tol Mishrak searched for him.
The other gods came and took it. Do you suppose we could talk about something else? Those particular memories are painful.
He was your enemy,
Geryon sighed. He was also a god, Zakath, and killing a god is a terrible thing to have to do.
You are a strangely gentle man, Belgerion. I think I respect you more for that than I do for your invincible courage.
I'd hardly say invincible. I was terrified the whole time. So was Torak, I think. Was there something you really wanted to talk about?
Zakath leaned back in his chair, tapping thoughtfully at his pursed lips.
You know, that eventually you and I will have to confront each other, don't you?
No, Geryon disagreed. That's not absolutely certain.
There can only be one king of the world.
Geryon's look grew pained.
I've got enough trouble trying to rule one small island. I've never wanted to be king of the world.
But I have, and do.
Well, then we probably will fight at that, sooner or later. I don't think the world was intended to be ruled by one man. If you try to do that, I will have to stop you.
I am unstoppable, Belgerion.
So was Torak. Or at least he thought so.
Well, that's blunt enough.
It helps to avoid a lot of misunderstandings later on. I'd say that you've got enough trouble at home without trying to invade my kingdom, or those of my friends. That's not to mention the stalemate here in Tol Mirgos.
You are well informed.
Queen Porin is a close personal friend. She keeps me advised. And Silk picks up a great deal of information during the course of his business dealings.
Silk?
Excuse me. Prince Keldar, I mean. Silk is a nickname of sorts.
Zakath looked at him steadily.
In some ways, we are very much alike, Dalgerian. And in other ways, very different. But we still do what is necessary, and what necessity compels us to do. Frequently, we are at the mercy of events over which we have no control.
I suppose you are talking about the two prophecies? Zakath laughed shortly.
Hey, don't believe in prophecy. I only believe in power. It is curious, though, that we have both been faced with similar problems of late. You recently had to put down an uprising in Aloria, a group of religious fanatics, I believe. I have something of much the same nature going on in Darshiva. Religion is a constant thorn in the side of any ruler, would you not say?
I've been able to work around it most of the time.
You have been very lucky, then. Torak was neither a good nor kindly god, and his Grolem priesthood is vile. If I were not busy here in Tor Murgos, I think I might endear myself to the next 1,000 or so generations by obliterating every Grolem on the face of the earth.
Geryon grinned at him. What would you say to an alliance with that in mind?
Zakath laughed briefly, and then his face grew somber again.
Does the name Zandramas mean anything to you?
Geryon edged around that cautiously, not knowing how much information Zakath had about their real reason for being in Tol Murgos.
I've heard some rumors.
How about Trag Sardius?
I've heard of it.
You are being evasive, Belgerian.
Zakath gave him a steady look, then passed his hand wearily across his eyes.
I think you need some sleep, Geryon told him.
Time for that soon enough, when my work is done.
Well, that's up to you, I guess.
How much do you know about Meloria, Belgerian?
I get reports, a little disjointed sometimes, but fairly current.
No, I mean our past.
Not too much, I'm afraid. Western historians tried very hard to ignore the fact that Meloria was even there.
Zakath smiled wryly.
The University of Malcina has the same short-sightedness regarding the West. Anyway, over the past several centuries, since the disaster at Vomimbre, Melorian society has become almost completely secular. Torak was bound in sleep. Tuchik was practicing his perversions here in Tol Murgos. And Zedar was wandering around the world like a rootless vagabond. Whatever happened to him, by the way? I thought he was at Tol Mishrak.
He was.
We did not find his body.
He's not dead.
He's not?
Zakath looked stunned.
Well, where is he, then?
Beneath the city. Belgorath opened the earth and sealed him up in solid rock under the ruins.
Alive?
Zakath's exclamation came out in a choked gasp.
There was a certain amount of justification for it. Go on with your story.
Zakath shuddered and then recovered.
With the rest of them out of the way, the only religious figure left in Meloria was Irvan, and he devoted himself almost exclusively to trying to make his palace at Malyaska more opulent than the imperial one at Malzeth. Every so often he would preach a sermon filled with mumbo-jumbo and nonsense. But most of the time he seemed to have forgotten Torak entirely. With the dragon god and his disciples no longer around, the real power of the Grolem Church was gone. Oh, the priests babbled about the return of Torak, and they all paid lip service to the notion that one day the sleeping god would awaken. But the memory of him grew dimmer and dimmer. The power of the church grew less and less, while that of the army which is to say the imperial throne, grew more and more.
Malorian politics seem to be very murky, Garion observed.
Zakath nodded. It is part of our nature, I suppose. At any rate, our society was functioning and moving out of the Dark Ages. Slowly, perhaps, but moving. Then you suddenly appeared out of nowhere and awakened Torak, and just as suddenly put him permanently back to sleep again. That's when all of our problems started.
Shouldn't it have ended them? That's sort of what I had in mind.
I don't think you grasp the nature of the religious mind, Belgarian. So long as Torak was there, even though he slept, the Grolems and the other hysterics in the Empire were fairly placid, secure, even comfortable in their belief that one day he would awaken, punish all of their enemies, and reassert the absolute authority of the unwashed and stinking priesthood. But when you killed Torak, you destroyed their comfortable sense of security. They were forced to face the fact that without Torak, they were nothing. Some of them were so chagrined that they went mad. Others fell into absolute despair. A few, however, began to hammer together a new mythology, something to replace what you had destroyed with a single stroke of that sword over there.
It was not entirely my idea, Garion told him.
It is the results that matter, Belgarion, not intentions. Anyway, Irvan was forced to tear himself away from his quest for opulence and his wallowing in the adoration of the sycophants who surrounded him and get back to business. For a time, he was in absolute frenzy of activity. He resurrected all the moth-eaten old prophecies and twisted and wrenched at them until they seemed to say what he wanted them to say.
And what was that?
He was trying to convince people that a new god will come to rule over Angarak, either a resurrection of Torak himself or some new deity infused with Torak's spirit. He has even got a candidate in mind for this new god of Angarak.
Oh? Who is that?
Zakath's expression became amused.
He sees his new god every time he looks in a mirror.
Oh, you're not serious.
Oh, yes. Irvan has been trying to convince himself that he is at least a demigod for several centuries now. He would probably have himself paraded all over Meloria in a golden chariot, except that he is afraid to leave Malyaska. As I understand it, there is a very nasty hunchback who has been hungering to kill him for aeons. One of Aldor's disciples, I believe.
Garion nodded. Velden. I've met him.
Is he really as bad as the stories make him out to be?
Oh, probably even worse. I don't think you would want to be around to watch what he does if he ever catches up with Irvan.
I wish him good hunting. But Irvan is not my only problem, I am afraid. Not long after the death of Torak, certain rumors started coming out of Tashiva. A Grolem priestess, Zandramas by name, also began to predict the coming of a new god.
I didn't know that she was a Grolem,
Garion said with some surprise.
Zakath nodded gravely.
She formerly had a very unsavory reputation at Tashiva. Then the so-called ecstasy of prophecy fell on her, and she was suddenly transformed by it. Now when she speaks, no one can resist her words. She preaches to multitudes and fires them with invincible zeal. Her message of the coming of a new god ran through Dashiva like wildfire and spread into Regal, Veresibo, Zamad as well. Virtually the entire northern coast of Meloria is hers.
What does the Sardian have to do with all of this?
I think It is the key to the whole business. Both Zandramas and Ervan seem to believe that whoever finds and possesses it is going to win out.
Agachak, the Hierarch of Rakurga, believes the same thing, Geryon told him. Zakath nodded moodily.
I suppose I should have realized that. A Grolem is a Grolem, whether he comes from Meloria or Tol Mergos.
It seems to me that maybe you should go back to Meloria and put things in order.
No, Belgerion. I won't abandon my campaign here in Tol Mergos.
Is personal revenge worth it?
Zakath looked startled.
I know why you hated Tar Urgas, but he is dead, and Urgot's not at all like him. I can't really believe that you would sacrifice your whole empire just for the sake of revenging yourself on a man who cannot feel it.
You know?
Zakath's face looked stricken.
Who told you?
Urgot did. He told me the whole story.
With pride, I expect.
Zakath's teeth were clenched and his face pale.
No, not really. It was with regret and with contempt for Tar Urgas. He hated him even more than you do.
That's hardly possible, Belgerion. To answer your question, yes. I will sacrifice my empire, the whole world if need be, to spill out the last drop of the blood of Tar Urgas. I will neither sleep nor rest, nor be turned aside from my vengeance, and I will crush whomever stands in my path.
Tell him,
the dry voice in Geryon's mind said suddenly.
What? Tell him the truth about Urgot. But do it, Geryon. He needs to know. There are things he has to do, and he won't do them until he puts this obsession behind him.
Zakath was looking at him curiously.
Oh, sorry, just receiving instructions,
Geryon explained lamely.
Instructions? From whom?
You wouldn't believe it. I was told to give you some information.
He drew in a deep breath.
Urgot is not a Murgo, he said flatly.
What are you talking about?
I said that Urgot is not a Murgo. At least, not entirely. His mother was, of course, but his father was not Tar Urgas.
You are lying.
No, I'm not. We found out about it while we were at the Drojum Palace in Rakurga. Urgot didn't know about it either.
I don't believe you, Belgerion.
Zakath's face was livid.
He was nearly shouting. Tar Urgas is dead, Geryon said wearily. Urgot made sure of it by cutting his throat and burying him head down in his grave. He also claims that he had every one of his brothers, the real sons of Tar Urgas, killed to make himself secure on the throne. I don't think there's one drop of Urga blood left in the world.
Zakath's eyes narrowed.
It is a trick. You have allied yourself with Urgot and brought me this absurd lie to save his life.
Use the orb, Geryon, the voice instructed.
How?
Take it off the pommel of the sword. Hold it in your right hand. It will show Zakath the truths that he needs to know.
Geryon rose to his feet.
If I can show you the truth, will you look? He asked the agitated Melorian Emperor.
Look. Look at what?
Geryon walked over to his sword and peeled off the soft leather sleeve covering the hilt. He put his hand on the orb, and it came free with an audible click. He turned back to the man at the table.
I'm not exactly sure how this works. I'm told that Alder was able to do it, but I've never tried it for myself. I think you're supposed to look into this.
He extended his right arm until the orb was in front of Zakath's face.
What is that?
You people call it Tragyaska, Geryon replied.
Zakath recoiled, his face blanching.
It won't hurt you, as long as you don't touch it.
The orb, which for the past month had rather sullenly obeyed Geryon's continued instructions to restrain itself, slowly began to pulsate and glow in his hand, bathing Zakath's face in its blue radiance. The Emperor half lifted his hand as if to push the glowing stone aside. "Don't touch it," Geryon warned again. "Just look." But Zakath's eyes were already locked on the stone, its blue light growing stronger and stronger. His hands gripped the edge of the table in front of him so tightly that his knuckles grew white. For a long moment, he stared into that blue incandescence. Then, slowly, his fingers lost their grip on the table edge and fell back onto the arms of his chair. An expression of agony crossed his face.
"They have escaped me," he groaned with tears welling out of his closed eyes. "And I have slaughtered tens of thousands for nothing."
The tears began to stream down his contorted face.
"I'm sorry, Zakath,"
Geryon said quietly, lowering his hand.
"I can't change what has already happened. But you had to know the truth."
"I cannot thank you for this truth,"
Zakath said, his shoulders shaking in the storm of his weeping.
"Leave me, Belgarion. Take that accursed stone from my sight."
Geryon nodded with a great feeling of compassion and shared sorrow. Then he replaced the orb on the pommel of his sword, recovered the hilt, and picked up the great weapon.
"I am very sorry, Zakath," he said again. And then he quietly went out of the room, leaving the Emperor of Boundless Meloria alone with his grief.
Chapter 3
"Really, Geryon, I'm perfectly fine,"
Zinedra objected again.
"I'm glad to hear that."
"Then you will let me get out of bed?"
"No."
"That's not fair,"
she pouted.
"Would you like a little more tea?"
he asked, going to the fireplace, taking up a poker, and swinging out the iron arm from which a kettle was suspended.
"No, I don't,"
she replied in a sulky little voice.
"It smells, and it tastes awful."
"Aunt Paul says that it's very good for you. Maybe if you drink some more of it, she will let you get out of bed and sit in a chair for a while."
He spooned some of the dried aromatic leaves from an earthenware pot into the cup, tipped the kettle carefully with the poker, and filled the cup with steaming water. Zinedra's eyes had momentarily come alight, but narrowed again almost immediately.
"Oh, very clever, Geryon,"
she said in a voice heavy with sarcasm.
"Don't patronize me."
"Of course not,"
he agreed blandly, setting the cup on the stand beside the bed. "You probably ought to let that steep for a while."
"It can steep all year if it wants to. I'm not going to drink it."
He sighed with resignation.
"I'm sorry, Zinedra," he said with genuine regret. "But you are wrong. Aunt Paul says that you are supposed to drink a cup of this every other hour. Until she tells me otherwise, that's exactly what you are going to do."
"What if I refuse?"
Her tone was belligerent.
"I am bigger than you are," he reminded her.
Her eyes went wide with shock.
"You would not actually force me to drink it, would you?"
His expression grew mournful.
"I'd really hate to do something like that," he told her.
"But you would do it, wouldn't you?"
He thought about it a moment and then nodded.
Probably, if Aunt Paul told me to."
She glared at him.
"All right,"
she said finally.
"Give me the stinking tea."
"Oh, it doesn't smell all that bad, Zinedra."
"Why don't you drink it, then?"
"I'm not the one who has been sick."
She proceeded then to tell him, at some length, exactly what she thought of the tea and him and her bed and the room and of the whole world in general. Many of the terms she used were very colorful, even lurid, and some of them were in languages that he did not recognize.
"What on earth is all this shouting about?"
Polgara asked, coming into the room.
I absolutely hate this stuff,
Zinedra declared, waving the cup about and spilling most of the contents.
I wouldn't drink it then, Aunt Paul advised calmly.
Geryon says that if I don't drink it, he will pour it down my throat.
Oh, those were yesterday's instructions,
Polgara looked at Geryon.
Didn't I tell you that they changed today?
No, he replied. As a matter of fact, you didn't.
He said it in a very level tone. He was fairly proud of that.
I'm sorry, dear. I must have forgotten.
When can I get out of bed?
Zinedra demanded. Polgara gave her a surprised look.
Well, any time you want, dear. As a matter of fact, I just came by to ask if you had planned to join us for breakfast.
Zinedra sat up in bed, her eyes like hard little stones. She slowly turned an icy gaze upon Geryon, and then quite deliberately stuck her tongue out at him. Geryon turned to Polgara.
Thanks, awfully, he said to her.
Oh, don't be snide, dear, she murmured.
She looked at the fuming little queen.
Zinedra, weren't you told as a child that sticking out one's tongue is the worst possible form of bad manners?
Zinedra smiled sweetly.
Why, yes, Lady Polgara. As a matter of fact, I was. That's why I only do it on special occasions.
I think I'll take a walk, Geryon said to no one in particular.
He went to the door, opened it, and left. Some days later, he lounged in one of the sitting rooms that had been built in the former women's quarters where he and the others were lodged. The room was peculiarly feminine. The furniture was softly cushioned and mauve, and the broad windows had filmy curtains of pale lavender. Beyond the windows lay a snowy garden, totally embraced by the tall wings of this bleak Murgo house. A cheery fire was crackling in the half-moon arch of a broad fireplace, and at the far corner of the room an artfully contrived grotto, thick with fern and moss, flourished about a trickling fountain. Geryon sat brooding out at the sunless noon. At an ash-colored sky, spitting white pellets that were neither snow nor hail, but something in between, and realized all of the sudden that he was homesick for Riva. It was a peculiar thing to come to grips with here on the opposite end of the world. Always before, the word homesick had been associated with Faldor's farm, the kitchen, the broad central courtyard, Durnick's smithy, and all the other dear, treasured memories. Now, suddenly, he missed that storm-lashed coast, the security of that grim fortress hovering above the bleak city lying below, and the mountains heavy with snow, rising stark white against a black and stormy sky. There was a faint knock at the door.
Yes,
Geryon said absently, not looking around. The door opened almost timidly.
Your Majesty, a vaguely familiar voice said.
Geryon turned, looking back over his shoulder. The man was chubby and bald, and he wore a brown, plain, serviceable color, though his robe was obviously costly, and the heavy gold chain about his neck loudly proclaimed that this was no minor official. Geryon frowned slightly.
Haven't we met before? Aren't you General Ateska's friend,
Brehedor, Your Majesty?
The brown-robed man supplied.
Chief of the Bureau of Internal Affairs.
Oh, yes, now I remember. Come in, Your Excellency, come in.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
Brehedor came into the room and moved toward the fireplace, extending his hands to its warmth.
Miserable climate, he shuddered.
You should try a winter in Riva, Geryon said, although it's summer there right now.
Brehedor looked out the window at the snowy garden.
Strange place, told Murgos. One's tempted to believe that all of Mogodom is deliberately ugly, and then one comes across a room like this.
I suspect that the ugliness was to satisfy Tychik and Taur Urgas, Geryon replied. Underneath, Murgos probably aren't much different from the rest of us.
Brehedor laughed.
That sort of thinking is considered heresy in Melzeth, he said.
The people in Val-Alorn feel much the same way. Geryon looked at the bureaucrat. I expect that this is not just a social call, Brader. What's on your mind?
Your Majesty, Brader said soberly. I absolutely have to speak with the Emperor. Otesco tried to arrange it before he went back to Rakvokat, but...
He spread his hands helplessly.
Could you possibly speak to him about it? The matter is of the utmost urgency.
I really don't think there's very much I can do for you, Brader. Right now, I'm probably the last person he'd want to talk to.
Oh?
I told him something that he did not want to hear. Brader's shoulders slumped in defeat.
You were my last hope, Your Majesty.
Well, what's the problem? Brader hesitated, looking around nervously as if to assure himself that they were indeed alone.
Valgarion, he said in a very quiet voice, have you ever seen a demon?
A couple of times, yes. It's not the sort of experience I'd care to repeat.
How much do you know about the Karans?
Not a great deal. I've heard that they are related to the Merindam in North Garagnadrak.
You know more about them than most people, then. Do you know very much about the religious practices of the Merindam?
Geryon nodded. They are demon worshippers. It's not a particularly safe form of religion, I've noticed.
Brader's face was bleak. The Karan share the beliefs and practices of their cousins on the Arctic plains of the West. After they were converted to the worship of Torak, the Grolums tried to stamp out those practices. But they persisted in the mountains and forests.
He stopped and looked fearfully around again.
Valgarion, he said, almost in a whisper. Does the name, Menga, mean anything to you?
No, I don't think so. Who is Menga?
We don't know, at least not for certain. He seems to have come out of the forest to the north of Lake Karanda about 6 months ago.
And?
He marched, alone, to the gates of Kalida in Jino, and called for the surrender of the city. Oh, they laughed at him, of course, but then he marked some symbols on the ground. They did not laugh any more after that.
The Malsine bureaucrat's face was gray.
Belgarion. He unloosed a horror on Kalida, such as a man has never seen before. Those symbols he drew on the ground summoned up a host of demons, not one or a dozen, but a whole army of them. I've talked with survivors of that attack. They are mostly mad, mercifully so, I think. And what happened at Kalida was utterly unspeakable.
An army of them? Geryon exclaimed.
Brador nodded. That's what makes Menga so dreadfully dangerous. As I'm sure you know, usually when someone summons a demon, sooner or later it gets away from him and kills him. But Menga appears to have absolute control of all of the fiends that he raises, and he can call them up by the hundreds. Urvan is terrified, and he has even begun to experiment with magic himself, hoping to defend Mariaska against Menga. We don't know where Zandramos is, but her apostate Grolum cohorts are desperately striving also to summon up these fiends. Great God, Spelkarian, help me! This unholy infection will spread out of Meloria and sweep the world. We will all be engulfed by howling fiends, and no place, no matter how remote, will provide a haven for the pitiful remnants of mankind. Help me to persuade Karl Zakath that his petty little war here in Tolmurgos has no real meaning in the face of the horror that is emerging in Meloria.
Geryon gave him a long, steady look. Then he rose to his feet. You had better come with me, Brador, he said quietly.
I think we need to talk with Belgarath.
They found the old sorcerer in the book-lined library of the house, poring over an ancient volume bound in green leather. He set his book aside and listened as Brador repeated what he had told Geryon.
Ervan and Zandramos are also engaging in this insanity, he asked, when the Melsine had finished. Brador nodded. According to our best information, ancient one, he replied.
Belgarath slammed his fist down and began to swear.
What are they thinking of?
He burst out, pacing up and down.
Don't they know that Ul himself had forbidden this? They're afraid of Minga, Bridor said helplessly. They feel that they must have some way to protect themselves from this horde of fiends. You do not protect yourself from demons by raising more of them, the old man fumed. If even one of them breaks free, they all get loose. Ervan or Zandramos might be able to handle them. But sooner or later, some underling is going to make a mistake. Now let's go see Zakath.
I don't think we can get in to see him just now, Grandfather, Geryon said dubiously. He didn't like what I told him about Urgot.
That's too bad. This is something that will not wait for him to regain his composure. Let's go.
The three of them went quickly through the corridors of the house to the large antechamber they had entered with General Ateska upon their arrival from Rakvarkat.
Absolutely impossible,
the colonel at the desk beside the main door declared when Belgarath demanded to see the Emperor immediately.
As you grow older, Colonel, the old man said ominously, you will discover just how meaningless the word impossible really is.
He raised one hand, gestured somewhat theatrically, and Geryon heard and felt the surge of his will. A number of battle flags mounted on stout poles projected out from the opposite wall, perhaps 15 feet from the floor. The officious colonel vanished from his chair and reappeared precariously astride one of those poles, with his eyes bulging and his hands desperately clinging to his slippery perch.
"Where would you like to go next, Colonel?" Belgarath asked him. "As I recall, there is a very tall flagpole out front. I could set you on top of it if you wish."
The colonel stared at him in horror.
"Now, as soon as I bring you down from there, you are going to persuade your emperor to see us at once. You are going to be very convincing, Colonel. That's unless you want to be a permanent flagpole ornament, of course."
The colonel's face was still pasty white when he emerged from the guarded door leading to the audience chamber, and he flinched violently every time Belgarath moved his hand.
"His Majesty consents to see you," he stammered.
Belgarath grunted.
"I was almost sure that he would."
Khal Zakath had undergone a noticeable transformation since Geryon had last seen him. His white linen robe was wrinkled and stained. There were dark circles under his eyes. His face was deathly pale, his hair unkempt, and he was unshaven. Spasm-like tremors ran through his body, and he looked almost too weak to stand.
"What do you want?"
he demanded in a barely audible voice.
"Are you sick?" Belgarath asked him. "A touch of fever, I think,"
Zakath shrugged.
"What is so important that you felt you had to force your way in here to tell me about it?" "Your empire is collapsing, Zakath," Belgarath told him flatly. "It's time you went home to mend your fences."
Zakath smiled faintly.
"Wouldn't that be so very convenient for you?" "What is going on in Meloria is not convenient for anybody. Tell him, Brador."
Nervously, the Melsine bureaucrat delivered his report.
"Demons,"
Zakath retorted skeptically.
"Come now, Belgarath. Surely you don't expect me to believe that, do you? Do you honestly think that I will run back to Meloria to chase shadows and leave you behind to raise an army here in the West, to confront me when I return.
The palsy-like shaking Geryon had noted when they had entered the room seemed to be growing more severe. Zakath's head bobbed and jerked on his neck, and a stream of spittle ran unnoticed from one corner of his mouth.
You won't be leaving us behind, Zakath. We are going with you. If even a tenth of what Brador says is true, I'm going to have to go to Coranda and stop this Menga. If he is raising demons, we are all going to have to put everything else aside to stop him. Absurd, Zakath declared agitatedly.
His eyes were unfocused now, and his weaving and trembling had become so severe that he was unable to control his limbs.
I'm not going to be tricked by a clever old man into...
He suddenly started up from his chair with an animal-like cry, clutching at the sides of his head. Then he toppled forward to the floor, twitching and jerking. Belgarath jumped forward and took hold of the convulsing man's arms.
Quick, he snapped. Get something between his teeth before he bites off his tongue.
Brador grabbed up a sheaf of reports from a nearby table, wadded them up and jammed them into the frothing Emperor's mouth.
Geryon, Belgarath barked. Get Paul. Fast.
Geryon started toward the door at a run.
Wait,
Belgarath said, sniffing suspiciously at the air above the face of the man he was holding down.
Bring Sadi, too. There is a peculiar smell here. Hurry!
Geryon bolted. He ran through the hallways past startled officials and servants, and finally burst into the room where Polgara was quietly talking with Tenedra and Velvet.
Aunt Paul, he shouted, come quickly! Zakath just collapsed!
Then he spun, ran a few more steps down the hall, and shouldered open the door to Tsadi's room.
We need you, he barked at the startled eunuch. Come with me.
It took only a few moments for the three of them to return to the polished door in the anteroom.
What's going on?
The Angorak colonel demanded in a frightened voice, barring their way.
Your emperor is sick, Geryon told him. Get out of the way.
Roughly, he pushed the protesting officer to one side and yanked the door open. Zakath's convulsions had at least partially subsided, but Belgarath still held him down.
What is it, father?
Polgara asked, kneeling beside the stricken man.
He threw a fit.
The falling sickness?
I don't think so. Wasn't quite the same. Tsadi, come over here, smell his breath. I'm getting a peculiar odor from him.
Tsadi approached cautiously, leaned forward and sniffed several times. Then he straightened, his face pale.
Thalat, he announced.
A poison?
Polgara asked him.
Tsadi nodded.
It is quite rare.
Do you have the antidote?
No, my lady, he replied. There is not an antidote for Thalat. It has always been universally fatal. It's seldom used because it acts very slowly, but no one ever recovers from it.
Then he's dying?
Geryon asked with a sick feeling.
In a manner of speaking, yes. The convulsions will subside, but they will reoccur with increasing frequency. Finally,
Tsadi shrugged.
There is no hope at all?
None whatsoever, my lady. But all we can do is make his last few days more comfortable.
Belgarath started to swear.
Oh, quiet him down, Paul. We need to get him into bed. We can't move him while he is jerking around that way.
She nodded and put one hand on Zakath's forehead. Geryon felt the faint surge, and the struggling emperor grew quiet. Brador, his face very pale, looked at them.
I don't think we should announce this just yet, he cautioned. Let's just call it a slight illness for the moment. Until we can decide what to do, I will send for a litter.
The room to which the unconscious Zakath was taken was plain to the point of severity. The Emperor's bed was a narrow cot. The only other furniture was a single plain chair and a low chest. The walls were white and unadorned, and a charcoal brazier glowed in one corner. Sadi went back to their chambers and returned with his red case and the canvas sack in which Polgara kept her collection of herbs and remedies. The two of them consulted in low tones while Geryon and Braedor pushed the litter-bearers and curious soldiers from the room. Then they mixed a steaming cup of a pungent-smelling liquid. Sadi raised Zakath's head and held it, while Polgara spooned the medicine into his slack-lipped mouth. The door opened quietly, and a green-robed Dalesian healer, Andel, entered.
"I came as soon as I heard," she said. "Is the Emperor's illness serious?"
Polgara looked at her gravely. "Close the door, Andel," she said quietly. The healer gave her a strange look, then pushed the door shut.
"Is it that grave, my lady?"
Polgara nodded.
"He has been poisoned. We don't want word of it to get out just yet."
Andel gasped.
"What can I do to help?"
she asked, coming quickly to the bed.
"Not very much, I am afraid," Zadi told her.
"Have you given him the antidote yet?"
"There is no antidote."
"There must be, Lady Polgara."
Polgara sadly shook her head.
"I have failed, then,"
the hooded woman said in a voice filled with tears. She turned from the bed, her head bowed, and Geryon heard a faint murmur that somehow seemed to come from the air above her, a murmur that, curiously, was not that of a single voice. There was a long silence. Then a shimmering appeared at the foot of the bed. When it cleared, the blindfolded form of Tsaradas stood there, one hand slightly extended.
"This must not be,"
she said in her clear, ringing voice.
"Use thine art, Lady Polgara. Restore him. Should he die, all our tasks will fail. Bring thy power to bear."
"It won't work, Tsaradas," Polgara replied, setting the cup down. "If a poison affects only the blood, I can usually manage to purge it, and Sadi has a whole case full of antidotes. This poison, however, sinks into every particle of the body. It is killing his bones, his organs, even his blood, and there is no way to leech it out."
The shimmering form at the foot of the bed wrung its hands in anguish.
"It cannot be so,"
Tsaradas wailed.
"Hast thou even applied the sovereign specific?"
Polgara looked up quickly.
"Sovereign specific? A universal remedy? I know of no such agent."
"But it doth exist, Lady Polgara. I know not its origins nor its composition, but I have felt its gentle power abroad in the world for some years now."
Polgara looked at Andel, but the healer shook her head helplessly.
"I do not know of such a potion, my lady."
"Think, Tsaradas," Polgara said urgently. "Anything you can tell us might give us a clue."
The blindfolded seeress touched the fingertips of one hand lightly to her temple.
"Its origins are recent,"
she said, half to herself.
"It came into being less than a score of years ago, some obscure flower, or so it seemeth to me."
"It's hopeless, then," Zadi said. "There are millions of kinds of flowers."
He rose and crossed the room to Belgrath.
"I think we might want to leave here almost immediately," he murmured. "At the first suggestion of the word poison, people start looking for the nearest Naissan, and those associated with him. I think we are in a great deal of danger right now."
"Can you think of anything else, Tsaradas? No matter how remote?" Polgara pressed.
The seeress struggled with it. Her face strained as she reached deeper into her strange vision. Her shoulders finally sagged in defeat.
"Nothing. Only a woman's face."
"Describe it."
"She is tall,"
the seeress replied.
"Her hair is very dark.
but her skin is like marble. Her husband is much involved with horses.
Adara, Garion exclaimed, the beautiful face of his cousin suddenly coming before his eyes. Polgara snapped her fingers. And Adara's rose. Then she frowned.
I examined that flower very closely some years back, Tsaradus. Are you absolutely sure? There are some unusual substances in it. I didn't find any particular medicinal qualities in any of them, either in any distillation or powder.
Tsaradus concentrated.
Can healing be accomplished by means of a fragrance, Lady Polgara?
Polgara's eyes narrowed in thought.
There are some minor remedies that are inhaled, she said doubtfully. But
there are poisons that can be administered in that fashion, Lady Polgara,
Zadi supplied.
The fumes are drawn into the lungs, and from there into the heart. Then the blood carries them to every part of the body. It could very well be the only way to neutralize the effects of Talat.
Belgaroth's expression had grown intent. Well, Paul?
Oh, it's worth a try, Father. I've got a few of the flowers. They aren't dried, but they might work.
Any seeds?
A few, yes.
Seeds?
Andel exclaimed.
Kazakath would be months in his grave before any bush can grow and bloom.
The old man chuckled slyly. Not quite. He winked at Polgara. I have quite a way with plants sometimes. I'm going to need some dirt, some boxes or tubs to put it in.
Tsadi went to the door and spoke briefly with the guards outside. They looked baffled, but a short command from Andal sent them scurrying.
What is the origin of this strange flower, Lady Polgara?
Tsaradus asked curiously.
How is it that thou art so well acquainted with it?
Garion made it, Polgara shrugged, looking thoughtfully at Zakath's narrow cot.
I think we will want the bed out from the wall, Father. I want it surrounded by flowers.
Made?
The seeress exclaimed.
Polgara nodded.
Created, actually,
she said absently.
Do you think it's warm enough in here, Father? We are going to want big, healthy blooms, and even at the best, the flowers a bit puny.
Well, I did my best, Garion protested.
Created?
Serenus's voice was awed. Then she bowed to Garion with profound respect. When the tubs of half-frozen dirt had been placed about the stricken emperor's bed, smoothed and dampened with water, Polgara took a small leather pouch from her green canvas sack, removed a pinch of minuscule seeds, and carefully sowed them in the soil.
All right, Belgareth said,
rolling up his sleeves in a workmanlike fashion.
Stand back.
He bent and touched the dirt in one of the tubs.
You were right, Paul. Just a little too cold.
He frowned slightly, and Garion saw his lips move. The surge was not a large one, and the sound of it was little more than a whisper. The damp earth in the tubs began to steam.
No, that's better, he said.
Then he extended his hands out over the narrow cot and the steaming tubs. Again, Garion felt the surge and the whisper. At first, nothing seemed to happen. But then, tiny specks of green appeared on the top of the dampened dirt. Even as Garion watched those little leaves grow and expand, he remembered where he had seen Belgarath perform this same feat before. As clearly as if he were there, he saw the courtyard before King Coradulin's palace at Vomimbre, and he saw the apple twig the old man had thrust down between the two flagstones, expanding and reaching up toward the old sorcerer's hand, as proof to the skeptical Sir Andurig that he was indeed who he said he was. The pale green leaves had grown darker, and the spindly twigs and tendrils that had first appeared had already expanded into low bushes.
Make them vine up across the bed, Father, Polgara said critically. Vines produce more blossoms, and I want a lot of blossoms.
He let out his breath explosively and gave her a look that spoke volumes.
All right. You want vines? Vines it is.
Is it too much for you, Father?
She asked, solicitously.
He set his jaw, but did not answer.
He did, however, begin to sweat. Longer tendrils began to writhe upward like green snakes winding up around the legs of the Emperor's cot, reaching upward to catch the bed frame. Once they had gained that foothold, they seemed to pause while Belgarath caught his breath.
This is harder than it looks, he puffed.
Then he concentrated again, and the vines quickly overspread the cot and Kalzakath's inert body, until only his ashen face remained uncovered by them.
All right, Belgarath said to the plants. That's far enough. You can bloom now.
There was another surge and a peculiar ringing sound. The tips of all the myriad twiglets swelled, and then those buds began to split, revealing their pale lavender interiors. Almost shyly, the lopsided little flowers opened, filling the room with a gentle-seeming fragrance. Geryon straightened as he breathed in that delicate odor. For some reason, he suddenly felt very good, and the cares and worries which had beset him for the past several months seemed to fall away. The slack-faced Zakath stirred slightly, took a breath, sighed deeply. Polgara laid her fingertips to the side of his neck.
I think it's working, Father. His heart is not laboring so hard now, and his breathing seems easier.
Good, Belgarath replied. I would hate to go through something like that for nothing.
Then the Emperor opened his eyes. The shimmering form of Tsaradus hovered anxiously at the foot of his bed. Strangely, he smiled when he saw her, and her shy, answering smile lighted her pale face. Then Zakath sighed once more and closed his eyes again. Geryon leaned forward to make sure that the sick man was still breathing. When he looked back toward the foot of the bed, the seeress of Kel was gone. Chapter 4 A warm wind came in off the lake that night, and the wet snow that had blanketed Rakhaga and the surrounding countryside turned to a dreary slush that sagged and fell from the limbs of the trees in the little garden at the center of the house, sliding in sodden clumps from the gray slate roof. Geryon and Silk sat near the fire in the mauve-cushioned room, looking out at the garden and talking quietly.
We'd know a great deal more if I could get in touch with Yarblek, Silk was saying.
The little man was dressed again in that pearl-gray doublet and black hose which he had favored during those years before they had begun this search, although he wore only a few costly rings and ornaments which had made him appear so ostentatiously wealthy at that time.
Isn't he in Garognadrak? Geryon asked.
Geryon had also discarded his serviceable travel clothing and reverted to his customary silver-trimmed blue.
It's hard to say exactly where Yarblek is at any given time, Geryon. He moves around a great deal, but no matter where he goes, the reports from our people in Malzeth, Mersin, and Magaren are all forwarded to him. Whatever this Minga is up to is almost certain to have disrupted trade. I'm sure that our agents have gathered everything they can find out about him and sent it along to Yarblek. Right now, my scruffy-looking partner probably knows more about Menga than Brador's secret police do.
I don't want to get sidetracked, Silk. Our business is with Zandramas, not Menga.
Demons are everybody's business, Silk replied soberly. But no matter what we decide to do, we have to get to Meloria first, and that means persuading Zakath that this is serious.
Was he listening at all when you told him about Menga?